It is a great joy to inaugurate this Sangha rainy season retreat, which may be the last rainy season retreat of the Kalpa, and to welcome back Ram to join us. It's a great joy to have you here again. And to see all the bright faces of the yogis who are on the path of Jivan Mukti and who are enlivened with the vibrant power of divine love. So in this retreat, we have to have a very specific focus. Which in a certain way for me was underlined by the recent video on YouTube, where it was very clear that when we have titles that refer to war and Armageddon, we get massive numbers of viewers and listeners. And when we put the word love in the title, almost no one clicks on it. And it's even worse if we put God in the title. God forbid we should put God and love in the title. We'd be out of business. Not that it's a business, but our message, since our message is love, this creates a little bit of a technical difficulty for us. And so therefore, the focus of this retreat is on the relationship between love and war. Love and hate. And why that is because hate and war are the final form in which love appears in the world. War is love. There wouldn't be anyone willing to fight except for love. But it's a partial love that demonizes the other, loves one's own party or country or religion and hates the other. But it's love that is the basis of the action of destruction. But what the ego doesn't realize is that if you project that the other is subhuman, you have by that projection made yourself subhuman. And because the world is a mirror, whatever you project upon the other is a reflection of yourself. And so the path of yoga, sat yoga, is the path of the purification of the heart in which all projections of non-love have been removed, have been eliminated. But our love has to be unconditional and unlimited in scope. Because God is everywhere. God is not simply someone who backs one country or one religion and has nothing to do with people of another. Every religion worships in one way or another the same God, and that God is love. Love is the supreme reality. So when it is said that God is love, that is accurate. It has become a cliche, And in a world in which love is all but missing in action, it's cynically rejected as even a possibility for living in love. But this is what has to be overturned. The very word sat, which means the real, means the supreme love. Infinite love, absolute love, love without any fine print of an exception. And all the ego is a set of beliefs that reject love. That's all. They are defenses against love because one was hurt when one loved in the past and never again. And one projects the feelings created by the traumatic wounding of the heart at an earlier time, and also introjects that as a sense of guilt and unworthiness of love. So the ego is that aspect of our consciousness that cannot love itself. And every wound, every form of karmic suffering, whether it's in the body or it's in the mind or it's in relationships, everyone is simply a symbolic representation of a lack of love within the heart. Whether it's for oneself or the other or both is irrelevant because we are all one. But it's the loss of that recognition of the oneness that has caused all of the suffering and then all of the karma that manifests that suffering in time and space. And so Jivan Mukti is liberation from any trace of non-love and liberation from the pain and the suffering and the karma of separation from the source of love, which is God, but which is the self. God is the self, not another. And so the job, the function, the purpose, the mission, the task, the sadhana of a sat yogi is to love one's self. That's it. It's that simple. Do you love yourself? This is the only question that needs to be answered in accord with the truth that you are love. And if there isn't love for the self, then that one that doesn't feel that is a false algorithmic internalization of a misunderstanding of reality. A wound that is the karmic consequence of a separation from the source of our being that had brought about the need to have a life in which that traumatic wounding would take place in order to motivate a quest for the return to healing, to wholeness. And wholeness is the union of the lover and the beloved, the soul and God, the conscious mind and the self. If you look up the word adoration in an English to Sanskrit dictionary, you find a huge, long, long list of words. And if you go down that list, you notice that a lot of the words are very common terms that we as yogis use, but we don't tend to identify or define the word as meaning adoration. For example, obviously bhakti is adoration, that's a definition for it. Puja it means adoration. Kirtan, but sadhana, did you know that sadhana means adoration? That's your yogic practice. Your practice is to be in a state of adoration of yourself. That's it. And not part-time adoration of yourself, and then the other part, disgust, frustration, anger, bitterness, and other kinds of feelings, but full-time love of yourself. How many of you are in full-time love of yourself? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, honesty is a great virtue, and I appreciate it. But your mission in this retreat for the next 2 weeks is to be in full-time love of yourself. Now, obviously, you can only love your real self. You can't love a false self. But since your real self is love, as soon as you feel love for whatever, you should focus on the love and not the object of the love. Because I know if I asked how many of you loved your cat, everyone with a cat would put their hand up, or a dog, or any non-human, mascot. I won't ask how many love other humans. And there's probably some who intermittently feel some of that. But it's impossible for the ego, which is split into seeing the other sometimes as a good object, worthy of love, and others as a bad object that shouldn't be loved. And therefore, the oscillation between those two prevents real love, which is without duality, to emerge and manifest. And so it's the overcoming of our inability to love. And you have to love yourself, because since yourself is love, without that self being awakened to shine with love, how are you going to give love to anyone else? And how are you going to recognize that the other is also a manifestation of consciousness, which is God, which is love? And therefore, the relationship with the other is actually aham aham, I to I, not I to thou, even as Martin Buber put it, but I to I, because everyone is I to themselves. And so if I want to relate to anyone as you relate to yourself, I have to relate to you as you are I. Anything else is an inauthentic relation. It's a projection. Because if you're in the second person, if you're other, then you'll be categorized with certain attributes and certain past history with me that, or with whoever, that creates a certain kind of a context. And because of all of the karma of old souls, everyone is in a state of mixed feelings about everyone else, because there's been every sort of karmic clash over the lifetimes of Kali Yuga, at the very least. And so there has to be a repair. But that reparation can only happen once you have repaired your relation to yourself. And you have become whole. The word samadhi actually doesn't mean adoration, but it means the culmination of adoration in the union of the soul and God. And it's the union that results from adoration, because the more you adore God, God being yourself, the more you are adored by God, until you realize that the adoration is the reality, not you or God. Both of those are simply concepts. What is real is the love itself. That's the reality. There aren't different individuals who might feel love or feel hate or feel something else. No, the only reality is actually love. And to love, there are no differences. There are no others. There's no multiplicity. There's only the self. There's only oneness. The radiant sameness, the samatha that Satpurusha speaks of. And so the healing of the world is to bring back the purity of real love. Nothing else will heal the world. And remember, real love has nothing to do with desire, nothing to do with possessiveness, nothing to do with attachment. Love gives freedom. It's the opposite of attachment. If you're not detached from someone, you don't love them, because you're not giving them the freedom to be on their own path to discover God within themselves. You want them to love you and not love themselves. And you may have been held captive by someone else's demand that you love them rather than love yourself. And so the purification of the heart requires freedom. If you love someone, you want their freedom. And you want your own freedom. And that means you don't want any bondages. And every bondage turns out to be a relationship of non-love, which creates a karmic account, because every time you project any energy that isn't love toward anyone, you now are in debt. You are now in a state where you have to make that up, because you have in a way sucked their energy, or you have put negative energy into them. You've created harm. That has to be repaired by transmitting love unconditionally. And so all of us have this karmic bank account that has, we're in greater debt than the U.S. government, if you can believe it. And that's very hard. Because of all the lifetimes in which there has been conflict and projection and war that we have participated in, all of that has to be undone. Now, the good news is it's going to be undone very rapidly, because of a secret that most people are completely unaware of that has to do with the structure of the cosmos. You see, in the ancient world, ancient Kali Yuga world, at least, the word cosmos was the important concept, not universe. Universe came later, and universe refers only to the turn. Verse means a turn, one turn of the cycle. It refers to the chronos time. That's what universe refers to. But cosmos means the divine order, and the divine order includes not only this universe that is going in one direction in time, but it includes the antimatter universe that is going in the opposite direction in time. Now, physicists today know that there is, in fact, an antimatter universe, but they don't know where it is. But they're afraid to find out, because if the two get close and actually collide, they annihilate one another. Nothing is left instantaneously. But what that universe is that is referred to as the antimatter universe is not somewhere else in space or time. It is simply going in a different direction in time. And in that universe, we are reaching the point of becoming completely divinized. In other words, we become divinized through becoming beings of total divine love. That's what makes you divine. And in the antimatter universe, which is going from Kali Yuga to Sat Yuga, we are reaching the ultimate level of Sat Yuga, in which we become Sat, the ultimate reality of divine love, at the same time that we become beings of conflict, of hate, of duality, of all of those negative forms of love at the end of the timeline of this universe. But the two are not separate in time, and in fact, they both exist within your consciousness. So at the level of your conscious mind, you may feel like you're a failure in yoga. But the other part of you, that's your Sat Yuga dimension, is a total success in yoga. And so you are simultaneously a total failure and a total success. But you only know the failure part. You don't yet know the success. But soon you will know the success. And that's when the two universes annihilate one another, and the singularity, which is the consummation of love, ends the universe of suffering and pain and enables the manifestation of the divine world, the kingdom of heaven, that is pure love, pure beauty, pure goodness, all of the things that are most desirable, most attractive, have to do with love. That's the essence of beauty, right? You love that which is beautiful. You love that which is good. You love all of that which is divine, and that which is divine is lovable and beautiful because of its vibrational frequency of love. So the vibrational frequency of your Sat Yuga self is exactly one octave separate from your Kali Yuga self. And as you meditate and reach the level of samadhi, that union in which the ego is annihilated annihilates the ego's world as well. Now you may think, well, how is that possible? But remember, what the physicists don't yet fully grok is that the world is consciousness. There is no such thing as matter. What consciousness is a space of awareness in which the energy of information, because information and energy are the same. This is now recognized by physics. And when that information becomes collapsed, its quantum wave function collapsed, the information is packed. The energy becomes materialized. But when it is re-energized, when the information is understood, when it is grokked, the matter again explodes into pure energy. And that energy is the energy of love. Because that's all that the world is made of. Divine love, divine light, they are the same. Light is the carrier wave of love. And so it's this moment in which the world will end in bliss. The destruction is not a destruction that's a horror. It's the entrance of total love into the world. That enlightens the world, and suddenly that's all that is the light that is love. No world. Because worlds are made of otherness. They are projections. But the information itself that makes up the implicate order that gets projected, when that information is understood, it's the mind of God. And the mind of God is simply that ultimate blissful singularity that is eternal and beyond time and space and appearance and matter or energy. It's that absolute self, the Parameshvar, Paramashiva, united with Parashakti. And this is the moment in which the culmination and the consummation of that wedding of Shiva and Shakti is to take place. And we are invited to be participants in that wedding and even to become, if you have the courage and the purity, of the bride and groom, because all of us are manifestations of both Shiva and Shakti. Our manifest form is pure energy. That's Shakti. The whole world is Shakti. And Shiva is the awareness in which that world is held with love. And so everything is dual, even though we talk about non-duality. Non-duality is the manifestation of duality in a state of love. That's all. And so why else and how else could nirvana be samsara? As the Buddhists say, it's impossible. How can a world of time and space that's immanent and manifest be the same as the unmanifest, absolute in which nothing happens and there is emptiness? And how is that possible? It's only possible because love unites the two. And your consciousness is in both. Your consciousness, even at this very moment, is transcendent as well as immanent. And that transcendent part of you is in the antimatter universe. And coming this way, as you meditate, you are drawing magnetically that opposite polarity of your superconscious to unite with your conscious and purify and annihilate the subconscious with all the unloving fantasies and sanskaras. But everything is dual, quantum wave functions and qualium wave functions. And they are intertwined, just like the double helix of the DNA molecule. Everything is intertwined. Samsara and nirvana are superimposed. They are not separate. Nirvana is not somewhere else. and our consciousness and our material bodies are not actually separate. The body is the manifest form of the love of the qualium wave function that presents itself with a certain figure in order to manifest its very specific form of beauty and goodness and divinity. Because God is infinite, there are infinite facets to the diamond mind, and that infinite potentiality of manifestation and every permutation of possibility has to be fully present, explored. The potentiality has to become kinetic. And the final potentiality is that of destruction, is that of the world becoming a place not of light but of darkness. But as soon as that darkness, and it's no accident that there was a solar eclipse today, which is also symbolic, even though we couldn't see it here, but the world is in that eclipse. And that eclipse of the divine light is now manifesting in the Middle East as a war that is threatening. In fact, this very evening, apparently, the rumors are threatening to expand into at least a regional level of war and possibly ignite the global manifestation of the implications of that conflict. Because everyone is so animated on one side or another. And the more that you find that countries make laws that you're not allowed to even have a flag of the other side, the more that other side, the people of that, are going to create civil unrest and war in those countries. And so the spark of war is spreading through Europe as a result of this, of the stupidity of the loss of freedom of speech and of impossibility of dialogue. And so it's only with the energy of love that all of this hatred can be overcome. But we must become pure emissaries of love who have no more hatred in our heart for anyone. And no more fear of anyone, so you cannot be intimidated. And because love is the ultimate reality, and love does not die. Love is the only force that conquers death. The ego will not survive the death of the body, but if you are a being of love, you will remain conscious after the death of the body and in full possession of all of the powers of consciousness. But you want to have those powers while alive, not just after the death of the body. You want those powers that come with love to be activated here and now. But they won't be activated if you want power for the sake of dominance or influence or prestige or some other egoic use. It's only when it's power in the service of God, and that power is love itself, which is the ultimate power. And the ultimate state of being, because it is immortality. It is eternity itself. So it is this realization that it has to start with a recognition of the truth of this. This is why don't make some distinction between jnana and bhakti as if they're two different paths. You can't get to bhakti unless you have jnana. You have to have the recognition that love is the truth of your being before you will be willing to open your heart to do the purification, because otherwise the superego will tell you, don't, it's not safe to be loving, you'll be exploited, you'll be taken advantage of, etc., etc. And you'll buy into those voices that say, no, no, you mustn't love. But if you do that, then you have defeated yourself and separated yourself from God, which is yourself, and worsened the wound that was already there. So I hope that everyone is willing to open your heart completely and to be in your heart and to live in love, because love is joy. Love is bliss. Anything, any other feeling than love is suffering. I mean, everyone knows that what they want is love. They're not happy because they think they need to find someone to love. But then you end up disappointed because the love ends up turning into something else, because those bad object projections are going to get in the way. As long as it's you're in subject-object duality, you can't love. And you won't be loved, and you won't even let yourself be loved, because love is a threat to the ego. It means you're vulnerable. You're open, and the ego won't do that. And so until you have gone beyond the ego and realized who you are, which is unborn, eternal, with no karma, with no belief system, no paradigm about reality, no cynicism and skepticism about love, none of that exists in your real self. Your real self is innocence, purity. And this is the meaning of the virgin, the one who has not been touched by separation from that innocence. And so this is the path that we have to be on until we have removed all of the impurities that are based either on hate or on skepticism or on fear or on attachment and greed and lust and all of the other forms of pseudo-love that are desire and repulsion and all those other forces of the ego that are opponents of love. Those must have been removed, burned in the fire of love for us to know freedom and the joy of the real self and to live in divine royalty and in complete empowerment, without being needy and without being weak and without being split and in internal conflict. So may we all find that non-duality of consciousness that manifests only as total adoration and unity of the one who loves and the beloved, who are none other than the same self. The subject and the object must become one. And that is samadhi. And that is what we mean when we say namaste. Namaste is another word for adoration, of recognition that who I see in you is God, which is myself, and there is only love between us, only adoration. That's what you're saying. Every time you say namaste, you're saying, I adore you. You realize that? Now, do you mean it when you say it? Because that's the key. It will have no power until it comes from your heart. So, this retreat is a honeymoon of 2 weeks of total love of yourself. And I hope that you will enjoy that honeymoon and that the child who will be born from that is a new world and a new shining divinized self that is completely free of ego, completely free of traces of past or of any sense of incompleteness or lack of wholeness, because love is the whole, the absolute source of all that is. May you give yourself this supreme gift that is also the supreme gift that you could give to the world. And it is also the way you graduate from this level of the wisdom school of the world and no longer be split into matter and antimatter and have to annihilate yourself in order to refine who you really are. But that's what ego death really is. Self-annihilation of what is unloving and therefore false until only love prevails. Namaste. Namaste. And I adore you all. And the floor is open.
Thank you. This felt like the best medicine ever. So I really appreciate this opening teaching. And I don't know, there's many things coming to mind, but when you were talking about the debt that we're all in debt, like what is the quickest way or the easiest way or the, because and I was imagining, like, you know, I think you call them a Hetch-a-Sketcher, where you just like shake this toy and then everything's disappeared. I kind of want to do that. I just want to like kind of shake things and then, mm-hmm. you know, have it all like a blank slate, because it mm-hmm. just feels like there's a whole myriad of mm-hmm. Of debt, of mm-hmm. bits of hatred here and there. Mm-hmm. And I think living in community as well, they kind of build up and build up. And I can see the desire that many people don't want to live in community, and because you can just keep hopping around to different places and you don't have to be faced with all those projections all the time. So you know, that was the image that came up, that I want to get the board and shake it up and mm-hmm. kind of erase everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, the answer that came to myself when I asked that question to myself was, because what I'm wanting is I'm wanting forgiveness, I guess. Mm. But then, so is that where it starts? The one has to forgive yourself or forgive the other or?
Well, who do you want forgiveness from?
Just everyone for...
But isn't it first that you want it from yourself, from your real self? Because you separated from your real self, right? Isn't that who you owe forgiveness to? You became identified with your body and not with yourself. And then once you became identified with the body, then you became someone who lived in a world of bodies. And then there are projections on those bodies, desirable or not, and you are suddenly in subject-object duality. You're no longer in the non-duality of love, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's that. Mm-hmm. And of course, yourself is God. And so I think it's also you want God's forgiveness, but they are the same. Mm-hmm. And the more that you love yourself, the more that you will receive love, and that love is forgiveness. All forgiveness means is giving forth. It's the giving forth of love. Mm-hmm. And when you give forth your love to yourself, which is God, it's not just God within, it's God everywhere. It's the same God, right? All everywhere and nowhere and within and without. All is one. So when you are in a state of love, there is oneness, and there's no longer anyone who has anything that needs to be shaken or removed. Mm-hmm. It's instantaneous and it's effortless, because is love an effort? Not really, it's right. It's joy. There's no effort involved. It's not work. And it can be done immediately. And that's the paying of all the debts. Shine with total unconditional love for everyone, and you've paid off all your debts. Because you're giving them what you took away from them in the past. And you give it to all people you don't even know. Because for love, there's no distance. So your love will reach Israel, Palestine, India, Russia, China, other planets. It will reach everywhere. It's cosmic. Love is cosmic consciousness. And once you are in that state, there is no longer any ego that needs to be forgiven. That's what is annihilated and shaken up and removed. And you realize all along, all you ever were was that total consciousness that is love, that gives birth to universes out of love.
It's beautiful. Thank you. Also something you mentioned at one point, the... not to be in fear, but also, to not be in fear as well as, maybe you said hatred.
Or conflict.
Yeah, conflict. Mm-hmm. And actually, I know most things are probably propaganda, but I did see something in amongst all the news I've been trying to limit myself watching of an Israeli family in one of the kibbutz that was attacked. And this couple were sharing that actually... because they weren't in a state of fear, I guess, she was like nursing they were being held hostage in their home. And that she was like feeding, they were there all day and she was trying to talk with them and say, you know, we're brothers. And she was like nursing some of their wounds and feeding them, and they didn't end up getting hurt. So it was just kind of an example of if you, you know.
Yeah, that's a very beautiful example of the power of love. Mm-hmm. Thank you for bringing that up.
And just finally, at the very end, when you said the honeymoon of the divine child being born. I know we don't usually share dreams, but I had this awful dream last night, and it's been with me all day, that I had this child baby I was looking after, but I hadn't been looking after it. And it had soiled itself, and I hadn't fed it for months. And it was okay. Somehow it was still alive. And I was like worried I was going to get, you know, in trouble for not taking care of it.
That's your real self.
And when you said that at the end, that's what I thought. So
yes, and so the birth has taken place now. Just take care of her. She's the goddess.
thank you.
thank you for this loving teaching. It was very, very useful to hear, and it's an important teaching that for this soul to keep remembering that. I have a question about, it's a question that came up recently in Gyana video as well, in terms of the wound of separation and healing that wound. Because, yeah, there's I can sense inside the part that's not loving and the part that even, like even the thought will come up, like, okay, I need to open my heart because without this, the sadhana is just distasteful and it seems just like discipline and work. Mm-hmm. And then I notice the resistance that the ego inside that just it doesn't want to even start loving. But as soon as there's more of an opening, it feels like the love is sort of sanding whatever feels solid inside and rough. Mm-hmm. And is opening it up more. It does feel like work in a sense, but mm-hmm. much more pleasurable work than just loveless work. Mm-hmm. And my question is, which I think the question has been asked many times, but does one need to know exactly what the non-lovingness is in terms of the past and whatever trauma happened?
No.
Or is it just...
No, what you have to know is the joy of love. Mm. That bliss of love will dissolve all the non-love. It's just a wound of having been unloved by ones who you needed their love when you were a very young and helpless infant, and you didn't get enough love and attention and recognition. And so that wound then keeps you from wanting to open and love mm-hmm. because it will also open all the hurt mm-hmm. that will have to be felt. And you'll have to love yourself enough to heal that hurt with love for the fact that you chose to go through that karma, you chose those parents because you had debts to them as well, and their lack of love was their repayment of your lack of love of them in another life, and now the accounts are settled, and now you have to forgive them and yourself, and you're done. And then the true discipline, which is the discipline of love itself. You know, the word sadhak, disciple, means one who is doing sadhana, which is adoration. So your sadhana is to be in a state of love, but that love is love for yourself, okay? Mm-hmm. Not love for others, for yourself. And then you will see there are no others, and everyone is yourself. All are manifestations of the one. There isn't a multiplicity. Mm-hmm. There's just a kaleidoscopic manifestation of all the different forms of I, but it's all one self. One cosmic self, though, not one individual bodily self. Mm-hmm. Your consciousness is not limited to that body. And so your body has put the contraction of that non-love in it. Mm-hmm. But your consciousness, which is infinite, can easily dissolve that with the energy of love for your body. You see, you don't love your body or mm-hmm. your bodily identity because that wasn't loved and given mm-hmm. enough attention. And so that contraction that you're feeling is a lack of love for yourself that is the continuation of a prior lack of love for you from others. And you're continuing an attack on yourself that you think is a defense against others, but is actually only a continual wounding of yourself instead of healing that wound. And you can only heal it by loving yourself. And that's your sadhana. And it shouldn't be work at all. If it feels like work, it's because you're resisting loving yourself. Because you bought into you're not worthy of love. At somewhere, you must have the belief that you don't deserve love, and so you continue the contraction. You bought into a negative projection from others, And that holding on to loyalty to that identification with that projection that you've internalized, which is now a superego voice that tells you you're bad, you don't deserve to sleep or to wake up or to be happy or any of it, that is what has to be dissolved with love. Okay?
That's a very profound answer.
And then you'll know freedom, and you'll know what it means to be a divine being. Mm. And that's what you must focus on.
Aji, yeah. And I think it's also very much as soon as there is a little bit of an opening, there's this realizing how much I've been closing, which then, and then it feels like there's even a loyalty to the closeness. It's like, oh, it's been closed this long.
I've
been depriving myself for so long. In a weird, distorted way, it justifies.
Yeah. The identity of the ego is someone who's closed to love, and you're just hurting yourself through that, right? But there's a fear of opening to the infinite. There's a fear of madness, and love is a kind of madness, but it's a beautiful kind of madness and intoxication and joy. Don't be afraid of it. It's not the psychotic kind of madness. That comes from being too closed. And then opening to hatred rather than love. And death rather than eternal life. When you open to life and love, you will be healed.
No resistance.
All right. Blessings for liberation.
Thank you, Shunya.
Are we on Zoom? Is there anyone with a question or?
Not yet.
Okay. You're a perfectionist, Hanuman.
I adore you as well.
Mutual.
Always when you speak about this, the antimatter universe, it's so intriguing in a way that I just always have these questions that emerge. And why am I more conscious of this universe and not my antimatter?
In the other one, you're more conscious of that one. You don't even know about this one.
Okay, so can you go between the two, or
you're going to? The two are about to meet. Your divine self, your avataric self, your complete godly nature in its fullness is about to manifest and annihilate the ego and the ego's world, because the world is just information put together in a certain way, based on fear and hatred, etc. And when it's exploded and there's only love, then the information reforms in a new mandala, and suddenly you're in the kingdom of heaven, and you don't even know how you got there. You're just suddenly there, and you're a goddess there. That's how this will end.
Okay, I don't even know what to ask, but it's hard to understand that.
Yeah, you'll get it when you are in the state of divine love, because You see, the divine process of development starts with love. That's chakra 4. When you are in that state of divine love, you are then crowned with wisdom. That's chakra 5. And then the top of that crown, the crown jewel, is the power that comes in chakra 6. And then once you have that, you are given the ultimate grace of chakra 7. In which you realize your infinite nature that extends to both of these aspects of the universe, of matter and antimatter, and there's a total unification of consciousness with every aspect of itself, and then the completion, the grand finale of that union takes place on every level.
Thank you.
So it will happen. And then the more you're in a state of love, the more you'll have the wisdom that understands, and the siddhis, the powers that come with that service of God, because that's our real sadhana. It only begins when we are siddhas, when we have the powers, the proficiency of the use of love to heal others. That's what we're here to use our powers for, and to raise the consciousness of all. And then that power leads to the ultimate liberation.
Mm. Okay. Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you. And you're on the path, so trust. Okay. Don't have any doubts or any questions or worries about how does it work. You don't need to study physics. Just focus on realizing you are love, infinite love, and everything will be added unto you.
Thank you. Okay. And you mentioned the physicists don't know where the antimatter is, but can you explain where it is or where?
It's in your heart. Okay. You see, matter is simply information that became, it lost its freedom by becoming a collapsed quantum wave function. And the other state is an opposite polarity that liberates all the wave functions. And so everything returns to the unified field of Brahman, which is the field of divine love, and in which Shiva and Shakti are consummating that ultimate love of energy and awareness, right? And then producing the mandala of a new world. Mm. So all of this is happening at the cosmic level and at the individual level simultaneously.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Mm-hmm. We have 3 minutes if there's any last question. If anyone? Oh, please.
Thank you, and namaste. I wanted to ask you something relating to when you say yourself. So you asked us to go on honeymoon for the next 2 weeks in total love, you said, with yourself, mm-hmm. right? So every time you said you have to love yourself, I was trying to write, and I was debating, how do I write this? Is this yourself, the whole word together, your S, little s, self, or is it your S, capital S, self? And it's important, though, because which self are you referring to? So just to finish, and then I get confused because I'm not, it's capital S. And then you tell Karuna that you have to love your body as well, and the body to me is more small s. Mm-hmm. So anyways, I just wanted to ask you that question.
Okay. The truth is non-duality. Mm-hmm. Your body is yourself. It's the goddess, because the goddess is nature. The goddess is the whole world, mm-hmm. right? See, the Buddhists are wrong. They call it Mara. It's not Mara, it's Shakti, it's mm-hmm. the goddess. But it looks like Mara to the ego, because the ego is in those, right, the rooster and the snake and the pig, that mm-hmm. little scene. Mm. It's not in the greater glory of divine love. But when you're in that state, it's Shiva Shakti. There's no mm-hmm. Mara any longer. So what you have to recognize is the little self is the big self. The problem is the little self became impure with a lack of love for its body, mm-hmm. for the qualities and attributes of its body, and for its others who didn't appreciate its body and all of that. So the ego, it orbits around its body image, mm-hmm. and most of its suffering is about the way its body looks. It's too fat, too thin, too small, too big, too whatever, right? And so the body becomes the site of self-hatred. But when there is self-love, or of the real kind, not the narcissistic love, mm-hmm. which is not real love, That's mm-hmm. that's a love of a certain kind of an image, but not of the real, right? Because the real is consciousness itself, not any of its objects or any of its imagination, and it's not any belief. It's not any signifier. It's none of that. So your body turns out to be just pure energy, pure spirit that is able mm-hmm. to function magically. You don't know how your body is able to move and dance and sing and do all the kinds of things bodies do. You don't even know how you're able to walk from one place to another. It all happens magically. Mm-hmm. Right? So all of life is actually being directed and moved by love, by God, by that one intelligence. There aren't many. So when you say, I have to love myself, which self, then ask, who am I? Mm-hmm. And what you'll discover is mm-hmm. I am awareness, I'm consciousness. Mm-hmm. I am love itself, right? Mm-hmm. How mm-hmm. can you not love love? So that's all. And then that includes body, mind, spirit, cosmos, nature, everything, right? Mm-hmm. It's all beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's a beautiful question. And just a last one, because I'm very intrigued by what you said at the very beginning, and we've commented on it, the outflow department. Why does love do so badly mm-hmm. in the searches? Why, if you give a teaching on love, and love is actually what you're inviting us to realize we are, and to become dispensers mm-hmm. of love to everyone. Love is what heals. The whole teaching was about that. Why is it that people are not interested in hearing about love?
Because they become cynical about love. They've been hurt too many times with love. They've been disappointed. Love has failed them. They have failed love. They have betrayed themselves. They're broken. Their hearts have been broken too many times. Their spirit is broken. And so love just brings pain. It brings the memory of all the ways one was hurt. What has replaced love is anger and fear and the desire to hurt someone else the way I've been hurt, that kind of thing. And that's what then promotes wars mm-hmm. and the willingness to be violent and cruel and perversely trespassing over the space of others and considering them subhuman and not worthy of consideration. It's because one felt one was treated that way oneself. Mm-hmm. And so love is a total threat to the personality of the ego that's based on anti-love. And it will dissolve the ego if you really allow yourself to love. Mm-hmm. Right? And you will realize that you are one with God. So that's why.
So would you say that there's also perhaps an unconscious fear of being vulnerable, of being attacked, if vulnerable,
it's conscious. Most people, yeah, I think it is.
And so I don't even want to hear about it because I don't want to go there.
Yeah, and I don't believe it. I've heard this too many times. Mm-hmm. Preachers talk about love all the mm-hmm. time, and then you see the way they act is not, you know, it's mm-hmm. hypocritical, et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. So, yeah, people are cynical about love and about teachings about love. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't change the fact that love is still all that we are and all that's real.
I'm very glad you are deciding to teach us more about love. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Okay. Well, I hope that this satsang has started your honeymoon and that you are in a state of the joy and the bliss of love and that you... will stay true to yourself, stay faithful to that love without giving in to any other feelings until the love has completely purified the heart and made you one with your God self, and you will feel the crown of divinization being put upon you like a halo, and that light will shine and give grace to all whom you meet. may you serve in this way, which is the mission of Satyoga. Thank you all. Namaste. Namaste.